You're listening to the TV Obsessive Channel, presented by TVObsessive.com.
Hello and welcome back to episode 41 of the TV Obsessive Podcast. My name is Ryan Kirksey, a writer and contributor for TVObsessive.com. I am once again joined by Cameron Crane. He's the executive editor of TV Obsessive. He's never knowingly left anyone in space. Cameron, how are we doing today?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty well, Ryan. Never left anyone in space there. But, you know, I was thinking about it, and, you know, we're starting to dig into Constellation again. We've been doing that each week in the latter half of the pod. So that's the reference point here. And I don't know, maybe this episode in particular, without getting into any spoilers yet, it did get me thinking, like, wouldn't be up for it.
No.
You know, like when we were kids, in particular, it was like astronauts, you know, astronauts are awesome. And no thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's so I mean, I've made it known before. I live in Houston and have done a lot of stuff. I actually live about 10 minutes from NASA. I've heard a lot of astronauts speak, have been part of a lot of events that featured astronauts. And they all talk about, of course, the majesty and sort of the wonder and all the stuff that they get to experience. And every time I hear one talk, I think, nope, not for me. I'm glad somebody does it, but it's not for me.
Don't think I'd be up for that. As per usual, before we dig in on Constellation, which I am enjoying a lot, actually.
Yes.
We're going to talk about sort of what's been in the news this week, what we've been watching a little bit, and so on and so forth. So it's March 15th, the Ides of March.
Yes, beware. What caught your
eye this week, Ryan?
Well, maybe we just go back really quickly before we go forward. I did watch the Oscars start to finish for the first time in maybe 8 or 9 years. Did you watch? Did you see what the ratings were? Do you know anything caught your attention? Did you catch the clips?
I actually did watch it.
Okay.
I mean, which is same. I don't know why, other than appealing to something like boredom on Sunday, I decided, hey, I don't know why. There was a certain buzz around this year's ceremony, I guess.
Yes.
But like, I haven't seen any of the films. So it is a weird kind of thing where I was like, I'm going to watch it anyway. You know, it's kind of a cultural event or what have you. I did come away wanting to see some of the films more than I had prior. So I guess, it did its job there. It was overall, I thought, focusing on the experience of the podcast, I thought it was pretty entertaining. Did you?
Yeah, I did think so as well. We note, which we'll put a link in our page, the ratings were 19.5, which is about a 4% increase over last year. This is the highest since pre-pandemic. So it's creeping up. You know, I saw a lot of predictions ahead of time. I thought, oh, this will be, you know, with Oppenheimer, with Barbie, with the big stars there, with Robert Downey Jr., with all these, this might be a 22 or 23 number. There just doesn't seem to be a whole large set of population that they're going to grab to just sit down and watch this from start to finish anymore. You know, people want to see the speeches. They want to see the wins. They want to rewatch the I'm Just Ken. But I mean, I don't know how many times I'll sit down in the future and watch 3.5 straight hours again. So, you know, I don't know if this is a problem. I mean, this is a sporting events thing. This is an Oscars thing. This is an everything, right? People just want to watch the highlights now. So, you know, not as much of a bump as they thought it would get. And, you know, if you're going to need another Barbenheimer to drive ratings that are like this, you know, I don't know if they get it this year.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. And also, I think it's weird because you're also hitting on, I think, part of what led me to go ahead and put it on.
Yeah.
Was along the lines of a sporting event. I would just turn the TV on and it would just be on for hours. And maybe I'm not always paying as much attention as at other times and so on and so forth. And like, that's what I wanted, you know? So I think there is a note to the world worth making that there still is an audience for that. And for something being live and for something being a kind of cultural event. I mean, it was the same with the Super Bowl. Super Bowl's ratings were quite high this year. I think we hit on that before. So, but at the same time, how many people just want to watch the significant YouTube clips or whatever, you know? Although I think I saw, I should have double checked on this. I was about to mention it. Someone was like, they didn't put Jonathan Glazer's speech on YouTube. I'm not sure if that's true or not. So I probably shouldn't have even said anything. But it did make me think, you know, look, if you're not watching the actual broadcast, then you're opening the door to that kind of post facto editing. You know, I did see something that they made like a condensed version that they put out internationally, and they didn't include the award for what is it, 20 Days in Mariupol?
Oh, so the full length documentary feature,
Yeah, and people were like, "Are you cutting this out on purpose? Because
yeah.
this would be
What's
great."
funny is that speech, and I think it was Cord Jefferson's speech, you know, he talked about sort of a little bit about race and also about, you know, the types of movies Hollywood makes. Those were the two that didn't get any of the play out music. They sort of just let them go. And that was very noteworthy, I thought.
But it was an entertaining show. And
Yeah.
Robert Downey Jr., you know, Clay Dockery's written a couple little blurbs on the site and such about the Oscars, looking forward to it as a broadcast and so on. And Clay was saying something about Robert Downey Jr. playing the kind of Jack Nicholson role. I
Yeah.
think it's a fair comparison.
They need a Jack Nicholson and a Meryl Streep for this
Yeah.
age, and then
That's
maybe
basically what Clay was saying. He was like, put Robert Downey Jr. in the Jack Nicholson chair. Like long term, because he kind of served that role, and you need that, and it went well.
that would be good with me. I'm happy with that choice.
What else we got here? A few announcements about when things are being released and so on. I don't know how much there is to say about them. Doctor Who, they finally announced the release date as May 10th. We can look forward to that. I don't have a whole lot more to say about that. We talked about, I watched the specials and so on, and you know, don't need to really revisit. They landed well enough for me that I am curious to see how this goes. We've got a new doctor, new companion, new showrunner. That's the old showrunner again, and Russell T. Davies.
How many episodes? Did they say how many episodes?
I don't know. It's probably like 10. I don't
Yeah,
know. It's
just like
Doctor
everything else. Yeah.
Who. Maybe a little bit more to talk about with Black Mirror. They have announced that Black Mirror season 7 is coming in 2025, before we know it. And the other bit tied into this, apparently one of the episodes is going to be like a sequel to USS Callister. What do you think about that?
Yeah, so I saw this news, and I found it interesting for a couple of reasons. I mean, number one, Jesse Plemons is like one of the biggest movie stars in the world now. So if you can get him back, if he is back for this episode,
I don't think he is.
oh, he's not. Oh boy. Okay. Well, now I have more
Because
questions.
you could, okay, wait. Real quick for everyone listening. Spoiler warning for Black Mirror USS Callister. But I just did you a service that the article I read in IndieWire, I think, but maybe it wasn't that one. I saw this a couple different places. At least one of them, the like subtitle for the article was like, Jesse Plemons' character is still dead. He's, you know. It's like, what are
Okay.
you doing? You know,
Oh, well, okay. So th this does raise some questions. I mean, I think USS Callister, San Junipero, there are a couple of episodes which were universally thought of as their best entries into this anthology. It is interesting considering, I guess, the past two seasons and sort of the reviews and ratings that it's seen. They would say, let's sort of go back to the well here and try to revisit some of the more popular ideas that we've had. I can't say that I'm particularly interested or more interested in that than I am into sort of some of the new ideas were, because they always, it's the first three or four seasons were so strong with sort of these new creative things that they brought to the table. To revisit it and not even revisit it with the people that were in the first episode, I'm
Well,
hesitant.
I from what I've read, I do think like the rest of the people who are in the fir in USS Callister are going to be in this. Jimmy Simpson, Malati, Kristen Malati, the Kristen or Christina, Kristen Malati, and maybe even Aaron Paul, who had the voice cameo and stuff like this. And like, okay, but my general reaction is kind of negative here. As you know, I've been really into Black Mirror. When I like started writing about TV, one of the first things I did was like write about every episode of Black Mirror. That was through what, season four at that point, I think. And then was on top of writing about Bandersnatch, was on top of about writing about season five. And then season six, when it came out last summer, we split up a little bit. I wrote a couple episodes. You wrote on one episode, I think, and a couple other people got in there. And I also wrote an article about why season six just felt kind of toothless to me. And I feel like revisiting USS Callister or the USS Callister universe just is another indication to me that they don't have new ideas. They've got a popular show, they've got a popular franchise, they're going to kind of try to keep milking it. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm the opposite of excited about the idea that one of the things they're going to do is return to USS Callister. Please don't, was my initial reaction.
Could not have said it better myself. I think that's it. I think we share the same sentiments. Like, find the new ideas instead of rewarming up the old ones.
Yeah, but I'll watch
Yeah.
it. Since they always win.
Yeah.
They win because I watch it anyway. Thinking about the plot, I don't know. Thinking about the plot of that episode, I do kind of wonder where they'll go with it because the ending, I guess there's the space, to continue that story if that's what they're doing. But anyhow, before.
Yeah.
News we can be unequivocally excited about that they are apparently not only in the midst of filming The Bear season three, they're filming season four at the same time.
Yeah. So, and without an announcement that season four had been renewed, they're just,
Correct.
I mean, so I have two sort of thoughts on this. Number one, The Bear already is outpacing all of the, what do you call it, popular shows, prestige shows, Emmy-winning shows, in terms of how fast they're able to put out seasons. And now they're saying, oh, we're doing two seasons back to back, which means we might get us, we know we're getting a season in June. Will we get another season less than a year after that? I mean, this is
What,
unprecedented compared to current TV, is what I'm saying.
yeah, what I was gathering is that they're doing this so they can stay on the same schedule and put it out then the following June, probably. But it's funny what you say. Yes, that lands for me as a comment. It seems like it takes, such a long time between seasons of shows. But the idea of there being a new season each year used to be normal, kind of should be normal. I think maybe they want it to be normal. That's something to think about. It might be a little bit jarring for us ultimately if we actually do get back to regular, regularly scheduled programming, insofar as first we had disruptions because of COVID, then we had disruptions because of the writer's strike, the actor's strike. And I mean, of course, there was a couple years in between those as events, but still, that's a big part of what's played into the fact that it's taken a couple years in between seasons. And when you didn't have that kind of disruption, you've seen some of these things turned around quicker. So.
We've commented recently on both Stranger Things and Handmaid's Tale. I also was researching a little bit to see if there had been any news yesterday about Severance, and the prevailing thought is early 2025, which means add another show to the list of 3 years in between seasons. I mean, yes, strikes impacted that, but man, I guess all that to say, kudos to the Bear being able to, put these things out on a regular basis. You still should put them out week to week.
Yeah, you definitely put them out a week to week. Kudos to FX. You're doing a great job. Way to go. Hooray. But please make it weekly. What are you doing? Yeah. It's like make it milk it more. What are you doing? It's
Yes,
it's in your
exactly.
interest. Yeah, but I mean, I do guess that part of why they're doing this, and this probably relates to some of the other shows too, in ways we don't know in detail. Part of why they're doing this is because The Bear's been as successful and acclaimed as it is. the people involved are getting other work and getting other
Yes.
offers, and now
Oh,
you have
yeah.
to coordinate their schedules and all of that. And so the thought is, we have everyone together here to do season three. Let's go ahead and do season four also.
Yeah.
Of course, that requires that they've been written already, but
Exactly. Yes.
apparently it's written. I wonder if there'll be more than that, or if season four is going to be it.
Okay, so I'm glad you said that as well. So if this was Everybody Loves Raymond or The Big Bang Theory, they would say, how many you can do? 12, 13, 14, 16 seasons. How many seasons of The Bear do you think we'll get? I mean, it's one of the most popular shows on television for, I mean, the first two seasons. Second season was even better, was even more critically acclaimed. How many seasons do you think? I mean, is this sort of a one of these where, okay, we've told our story, or we're going to do 10 seasons of The Bear?
I mean, it's increasingly rare for shows to go beyond three or four seasons if you think about it. And there are reasons for that in the background. Everything's changed. You know, the reason why all of the shows from the 1990s that were successful are seven seasons long is because they signed seven season contracts at the
That's right.
beginning. I'm totally the reason why the X-Files, the reason why in season eight of the X-Files, season nine of the X-Files, David Duchovny isn't around is because it would require a new contract, right? But now it's not like that. And indeed, with the streaming models, as I understand it, they build the contract such that when they get to season three or season four, the shows are becoming more expensive. But I mean, I absolutely hate this. The shows are becoming more expensive because that's when they have to start paying people more money, the people who make the shows. But that's a reason why you see things canceled after a couple seasons and so on. So it's great that the Bear's at least getting four seasons, apparently. But I wouldn't be surprised at all if that's it.
I mean, this is just, I mean, you and I agree. This is just some warm comfort food that we know we're going to get this show the next two summers. But yeah, we sort of live in a landscape that makes me wonder, oh, okay, they know that that's what they want to do, and that's what they're allowing them, and that's the story they're going to tell. And then those people are going to be so popular after that that they just, can't get the band back together, as it were, I guess.
Yeah, but I mean, seriously, I've shifted. Like I said over here, the creators of the Yellow Jackets apparently have a plan for five seasons. I'm constantly like, oh, I hope they get five. They get canceled. You know, this is a totally new world. Speaking of which, sort of, I can make this said, Snowpiercer. You ever watch Snowpiercer?
Right,
I
so you're
guess
gonna
how
have to
did
tell
it
me
do?
about the show. I do not know anything about Snowpiercer, but season four picked up.
Yeah, okay, so. First of all, I'm not a fan of Snowpiercer myself. I haven't seen the show, but I know that it has a lot of people out there who are fans of the show, and it's one of those that was really unceremoniously canceled by TNT, in particular because my understanding is season four was already done, and it was one of these Zaslav kind of decisions. That TNT was just going to put it in the can. They weren't going to air it. Snowpiercer, it's based on a film. And the director's name is eluding me at the moment. I should have made a note of that. Anyway, it's kind of a premise of this train that is just the world is all frozen because of global warming or something like this. And there's just a train, and like all of humanity exists on this train. And then the cars of the train are segregated by class. This is what I know about Snowpiercer. To be clear to everyone listening, you shouldn't take this as spoilers because I have not seen it. Okay. But then they made it a TV show, and it definitely has its fan base. And people were definitely upset when it got canceled. And I kind of joined them in that sympathetically, you know. But yeah, the announcement is that AMC's picked it up. AMC is going to air season four, the last season of the show in 2025. So good news for Snowpiercer fans.
More stuff for 2025. Okay. What
Yep.
about Did you see this news? This was interesting this week. I mean, you and I've talked about how we used to watch the old X-Men animated show. We know that Disney Plus is putting out the new X-Men 97 in just a few days. Beau DeMeo, one of the, I guess, senior writers for the show, right before this is set to come out, fired by Disney, no press release, social media is gone.
Yeah, it's weird.
This is very odd, a very
Yeah.
odd turn of events here.
But he's basically the creator of this reboot, as I
Yes.
understand things. And saw the story, read through it. This is one of those things that it veers a little bit towards gossip, which I don't generally want to engage in on here,
Yeah.
but what's going on? Because it
Yeah.
does seem like he got fired. And there's no explanation. Like, actually, I read articles in, from several different outlets on this, and none of them had any further information or details. And all of them said that they reached out for comment and got none
Yes.
from either side.
Zero. I mean, he has disappeared from social media. I will say everything I read about this, every one of them seemed to have this sort of similar comment about, in the past, Beau DeMeo has gotten in a little bit of hot water because of things he's said or done on social media. But and so that being deleted, him being fired. So people are trying to connect dots again, sort of in a gossipy type of way. But it is strange that there would be nothing from either side, which tells
Right.
me there's
And
some lawyers involved here.
yeah, so I just wonder what's going on. And it feels fair enough for us to be talking about it to me because
Yeah.
it's a mystery. The show's about to come out. He's been probably the most vocal advocate of the show. You know, you talk about a social media account
Yeah.
disappearing. He'd been pushing the show on social media and it was a source for updates about what was going on with it as it went through production and so on. My understanding is he's like already written the second season and so on. And you would expect with the show about to come out in just a few days that he'd be out there promoting it and so on and so forth. And we're getting the radical opposite of that. So, like, what's happened here?
Yeah.
It is a question, and I'll have my eye out for an answer to that eventually.
Yeah, one of these we'll probably never know the real answer, but this is highly unusual for
I'd
something.
settle for a cover story.
Yeah,
Like,
right.
this is like, this is nothing. You know, I don't even got any PR speak to try to parse through or anything. So, that being said, still looking forward to X-Men 97 coming to our screens.
Absolutely.
What is it, the 20th that comes out, I think?
Yes, I believe it's Wednesday next week. We'll
Yes.
get that season. I think I've seen some reviews for the first few episodes, and everybody is, I mean, to a person has said, you like the old one, you're gonna love the new one. That's basically
I can't wait till it comes out and people start calling it woke.
the Oh, they definitely will.
It's the X-Men, for God's sakes. Like, this show has always been like a civil rights allegory. What are we
Exactly.
doing anyway? I've got one more thing. There's not a lot to talk about here. It's the Vince Gilligan project with Rhea Seehorn, and that's why it's on my notes.
Yes.
We don't know a ton about it. It's a casting announcement this week. Carolina Wydra, hopefully I'm saying that right. Who's been in some various things that I've watched? You familiar with her work at all?
No, I was looking at her list. I haven't seen too much that she's that she has been in, but I'm always interested to see who can sort of go toe to toe with who's going to be the star of this series.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen various things. She's never had a super big role. Like, Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. might be the biggest
Yeah.
role, which I did watch. I was a fan of that show. She was in Twin Peaks, The Return. And
Okay.
if fans of Twin Peaks listening don't remember her, she was one of the people in the Roadhouse. The
Okay.
main character's name was Chloe. Yeah, I know you haven't seen it. Glad I know you haven't seen it,
No,
but
not yet.
there's all these scenes where there are these really the most minor characters you can possibly imagine. Like, they're not even connected to the story. She's one of those. And it's an unnamed show. I wish they would give it a name so it would be easier to talk about, but they're working on it on Apple TV Plus and
Yeah, so Vince Gilligan moving to Apple TV Plus. The most interesting thing I took out of this story, which we have here from Deadline, is this was a straight to series 2 season pickup. So basically, just here's a blank check, Vince Gilligan. We trust you. Go do your thing. Which, why not?
That's Gilligan.
Yeah.
Come on. There is a part of me that is incredibly worried. Like, I'm really excited. There's a part of me that's incredibly worried, and it's
Yeah.
probably just because of what happened to Matthew Weiner. What did happen to Matthew Weiner?
Are you at all worried that Vince Gilligan said one of these quotes is, "I'm tired of writing anti-heroes, so I'm going to write about heroes for a little while"?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Like,
Yeah.
I want to see it really, really bad. I'm really looking forward to it. But I mean, I don't even know if the Matt Weiner thing connects for Lancer people. He did Mad Men. Mad Men's great,
Yeah.
right? And then he did The Romanovs. Did
Oh,
anyone watch
okay. Nope.
it? I watched it. I wrote on it some. Tag team did a little bit with Lindsay Stavius. And like, I thought it was pretty good. It was a mixed bag. It was kind of an anthology show. And it just didn't do very well. And then it seems to me like Matthew Weiner just disappeared. So maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe he's, out there doing something I'm not aware of. But it put me in mind of that a little bit because similarly, Vince Gilligan coming off the heels of Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul.
Yeah.
And then what does he do next? And, he's saying it's a pivot stylistically and so
Yes.
on. But I don't know. Vince Gilligan's got chops. I mean, he worked on the X-Files and all that too, so.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, I'm not worried about it. This is if Vince Gilligan's involved, I think you and I both will be watching it the first possible moment that we can.
Absolutely. And Ray Seahorn,
Racy
who won
horn.
7 Emmys for Better Call Saul in my heart.
And you're right. Yeah. She's the star of this unnamed show, whatever it is.
She won 0 Emmys in reality, but she won 7 years in a row, according to me. All right, good. So you hit on the Oscars and talk about what we've been watching. Same old on your end, as I understand it.
Yeah, pretty much the same, but am very much looking forward to, we are less than a week away from Three Body Problem coming out on Netflix. It's a Netflix model, the whole series dropping at once. They released what I thought was a very interesting trailer a few days ago. It is impossible to tell from this trailer what the show is about, but I've about done with the first book and understand. I'm digging into the show this weekend so I can write about it. I think we're going to do 4 pieces on Three Body Problem. First one will cover the first episode on Thursday. I have very high, from what I've seen and read, I have very high hopes for this show. It is going to involve some I think it'll be a hard show to second screen. I think it'll be a hard show to,
Good criteria, yeah.
Do the laundry at the same time, but Benioff and Weiss might be moving back towards being in people's good graces again, if what I have seen and read is to be believed.
Cool, yeah, I'm looking forward to that one as well. And to you writing on it and all of that. It's always tough to figure out how to write on things when they drop it all at once, you
Yep.
know. That's why I complain about it all the time. I mean, I complain about it in two ways. I would also complain about it just as a viewer of television,
Yes.
but as someone who wants to write on television and organize things where other people are writing on television for this website, TV Obsessive and everything else, like, how do you do it? I still don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what lines up well with how people watch it, you
Yeah.
know? Because I think it is a good plan that you want to take it in chunks, you want to deal with it in some level of detail, but anyhow,
And I'll just as
not
we
enough.
referenced FX earlier, just as one data point, one specific piece of reference. FX is releasing Shogun week to week, eight episodes, one a week. There are now two podcasts and three sites that I religiously look at every time I see that episode because I want to digest what's in there. Now, that's a very thick, dense historical epic, but I would do that with The Bear and with Three Body Problem as well. I would do it.
Yeah, that becomes the experience, you
Yeah,
know.
exactly.
That's where it goes back to when I first started getting into all of this, really was with the new Twin Peaks in 2017. And that experience of having a week to digest, to think, to talk to others. I mean, oh my God, so much around that show for 3 months, 4 months almost it was. So yeah, I really do prefer when people release things week to week. It's a lot more fun.
What about you? Anything else new you're checking out?
Yeah, so very briefly, I did watch a second episode of The Regime. Nah.
Yeah, I'm very content with the fact that I did not watch the second episode.
It was I don't want to be too harsh, but I almost turned it off halfway through. And I had to muster the will to say, oh, I'm gonna finish the episode. And I just don't know what the show's doing, really. Still, the other thing I was going to mention, I've mentioned a couple times on here, is Pablo Torre Finds Out, which is a podcast that's also on YouTube. I generally watch it on YouTube, so that makes it more like a TV show. Consistently enjoy it. I mean, it's a mixed bag because it's always a different topic, But I wanted to mention this one to you. Did you, when we were younger, did you ever used to watch TRL on MTV?
Total Request Live, right?
Yeah.
Yes. So this was like the college rotation. Like you turned it on and it's on all day long, or you watch the repeats at night. I remember TRL being like Eminem would come on and complain about Britney Spears, or Britney Spears would come on and complain about Eminem. And every once in a while, they'd show some videos, and Carson Daly would like play Peacemaker with people. That was my memory about TRL.
Yeah, it was a big deal,
Yes.
right? I'm not saying I watched it religiously or whatever, but it was, like, okay, so we think back to 1999, TRL was a huge
Yes.
deal. And I don't know if you remember this particular event that happened in the early days of the internet when people got in their minds that they were going to vote for New Kids on the Block song, Hangin' Tough.
No,
Do you remember
I
that at all?
do not
Okay.
remember this.
Anyhow, there's kind of a troll,
Yeah.
but anyhow, this past week, Pablo Torre had on, I think it was Yorgo Artisitas. Sorry if I pronounced that wrong, as I probably did. And he's got a forthcoming documentary on this topic also. It's really pretty interesting. The long and short of it is, it was all rigged.
I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised.
It was, no, it's what it was one of those things where it was at the same time, like it was really disappointing, but also, yeah, totally not surprising. And so basically the Hanging Tough thing is a starting off point for this story, and so far as part of what got it going in terms of investigating it, I guess, was that the results said that a certain percentage of the votes for Hanging Tough, which that day came in number two, they gave it number two, were by phone. And that doesn't make sense because when you voted by phone, they gave you the options, right? You think about it, you can't just choose anything. And Hanging Tough was not one of the options. And then also in digging into it, apparently, you got people on record saying, yeah, in the production, there would be conversations about what kind of show this is and what its vibe is, and things would be excluded on the basis of being not a fit, So like as far down the path of metal as they were willing to go was Korn. Right. Korn was on there all the time. It's like bouncing around and all that. But yeah, by implication, people
It's
would.
funny you say that. I was in my mind, I was thinking, who do I recall? And the first band that jumped to my mind was Limp Bizkit. That's what I first remember being on there all the time.
Yeah, but so apparently, I don't know, in the Pablo Torre episode, no explicit examples were given. Maybe there will be some in the documentary. I think it's a feature-length documentary that's coming out.
Interesting.
I think it's called Troll, with the O and
Dude,
the L in parentheses.
that's the stuff I'll check out. I told you about watching this documentary about American Gladiators. Like, give me all documentaries about the stuff from my youth. I will watch all of them.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me. So it's
Yeah.
like, these are the Pablo Torres that I've brought to us here. This one, the Maury Povich one. There's some
Yes.
other good ones. I mean, like I enjoy it pretty consistently. It is often about sports, which is, Pablo Torres' background, but
Yeah.
yeah, a bit broader than that, and enjoyable show. So, recommendation: Pablo Torre Finds
All
Out,
right. Sounds
available
good.
as a podcast or on YouTube or on whatever, I don't know, some other thing that they're always plugging. I don't know what it is.
All right.
Okay, but yeah, let's
Fine.
get to Constellation. This would be your spoiler warning that on the other side of a brief musical interlude, we're going to dig in on Constellation episode 6. The title of the episode is Paul's Dead. Talk about that more. And yeah, so spoilers on the table for everything up through episode 6. And we'll see you in about 10 seconds.
Okay, welcome back to the TV Obsessive Podcast. We're here talking about Constellation, episode 6. Paul is dead. We're three-fourths of the way through the season already. This episode, written by Peter Harness, as all the first five were, but we have changed directors for the last part of the season. This is directed by Joseph Seder. Episode six switches our perspective and switches our universes and our realities and is told from the perspective of Paul, who, as we saw in the first episode, was the one who died aboard the ISS. But from the moment that the accident happened, this episode takes us through his reality where he survived, and Joe is the one who died aboard the ISS. In this version of reality, Magnus and Alice are dealing with Joe's death, how to put their lives back together. It turns out she was left in space by Paul because he remembers receiving an order to do so. Paul is questioned over and over again why he left Joe's body in space, even though he is adamant about the fact that NASA ordered him to do it. His world, much like Joe in the episodes previous to this, starts slipping around. Things don't make sense. His family's names aren't what he remembers. Details about the mission doesn't line up, and his memory starts to go and is not lined up with the world that he is now in. So he seeks someone out who thinks might be able to help him. He thinks it is Henry Caldera, but in fact, it is Bud who exists in this reality. Paul wants to know what's happening to him, but Bud is not interested in talking about anything to do with that. And the episode ends with Bud shooting Paul, going to black, leaving Paul's fate in this reality unclear as we head into the last two episodes of the season. So, pretty straightforward in terms of timeline here and which reality we are in. This even provided some clarity as to, we're pretty clear now that in the universe where Paul died, Joe came over. In the universe where Joe died, Paul came over. So what do we make of this? Just sort of switching our perspectives here this far into the season.
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, I mean, I thought it was great.
Yeah.
And I like where the show is going, as implied by doing this, by pulling this move, where it's always a risk when you have an episode of a TV series without the lead,
Yep.
which is basically what we get here, shifting the perspective to Paul. I like the move. I think it works well. I think you're right that it answers some questions, or definitely gives a good amount of information to help us grapple with those questions. At the same time, there's a lot to parse here.
Yeah.
There's a lot to parse here. And I just want to say, I guess we'll talk through as much of it as we can, and whatever comes up and whatever's interesting. But you can also go read my recap, where I
Yeah.
think maybe I just feel like maybe some of these details aren't going to manage to get into our conversation on this one.
And another week of a very good recap from Cameron. This is sort of must reading along with these episodes. I thought very well done again this week.
Thank you. Maybe start with a reality question, right?
Yeah.
Because this is one of the things where, as you said, on the one hand, it almost feels like, oh, okay, we've got to figure it out, right? Like Paul went to the world that Joe was from, and Joe went to the world that Paul was from, or but actually no, because it's not, what do we get? There are at least three realities that we've seen on screen, not two. Because the starting point for Paul here is the same as the starting point with Joe back in episode one, I believe. I'm just willing to say that, like, that's the same reality. There's the Cal device. Paul's working on the Cal device, right? And that's the biggest wrinkle about the world we proceed in for the most part in this episode, is the Cal device does not exist and never existed in the world that Paul finds himself in.
The Cal device does not exist in the world that we see in this episode. That's what you're saying. So there's no familiarity with it by the NASA officials, by Bud Caldera, by anyone he can talk to. Whenever he references that, and you're correct about this, that there's a sense of we have no idea what you're talking about, which is part of that sort of de-evolution of his mind, and sort of things are slipping. He doesn't know what's going on here. Where actually is he?
Right. And I don't think they're covering it up,
Right.
because this would also seem to be the world we've been seeing all along whenever we've seen Bud. So I don't know if we quite put this together before, but Henry Caldera is the one who invented the Cal device.
Yeah.
And in the world where he's known as Henry Caldera, where you've seen him and he's, got his act fairly well together. He like won the Nobel Prize and so on and so forth. I think from what we get in this episode, we can put together that in that world, he did save the day on Apollo 18 and so on, right?
Yeah.
Whereas in the world where he didn't, he becomes Bud Caldera, who's a failure and a drunk
Well,
and that has killed at least one person, maybe two at this point.
at least, and so this is an important point to mention, is that in those divergent worlds, there's the one where Bud becomes a drunken failure, no one respects him, everyone blames him for what happened. Then there's the Henry Caldera world where he did sort of save the day, as it were, came back, was respected, allowed to continue with his profession, won the Nobel Prize, may understand that things are not right, but it's allowed him to have a career. And then, because he had that career, invent this thing that helps him explain what it is that might be going on that made these things happen.
Yeah.
Okay.
What is weird, though, is pulling back from, I think it was last week in episode five, when Henry Caldera is mentioned when she's at the Skagerrak. Joe says she remembers him being a drunk and a failure. So,
Because she came from the world where he was.
but the first Joe that we saw in the series was in
Yes.
a world where the Cal device existed.
All right. You've talked me into a circle here, and I think that you're right about this.
Yeah.
How does Joe, the Joe in our quote unquote world, know Bud is a drunk and a failure if she's familiar with the Henry who was leading the Cal device before the debris hit it, before the accident, before people died? Yeah, how does she know those unless there's a different reality, some kind of third reality?
Yeah, I'm starting to wonder if there are at least four. We
Yeah,
went down a path that I wasn't fully prepared for, or my
no,
mind did as we started talking about this. I think it's unclear, you know?
yeah.
And maybe I already was to that point when I was writing my recap article and all of that. It is because there are at least three, is what I said, right? Because it seems like there's a shared reality that we start with. There's another wrinkle here that we see in this episode, episode six. Before Joe dies, there are two Joes, very briefly. And we know there are two Joes because one of them has lost hold of her iPad and the other one hasn't. They almost seem to see each other, you know?
Yes.
So it does seem like that moment with the Cal device, you could point to plausibly as splitting realities, and then weirdness happens and people end up in the wrong worlds or something like that. But look, let me just say this, I guess. I don't know that Constellation is going to ever clear all of this up perspicuously. And I also don't know that it has to. I think it might be okay if it doesn't.
And so this is a, and maybe this is a question we also save for the end. Sort of this idea of what does Constellation owe those that are watching this show, right? Does it owe all of this explanation, owe all this exposition? And I think you and I would agree that not we don't necessarily need that. We prefer a more interesting story and a more interesting narrative than tell us the answer to every question. But there are, with many of these types of shows, certain questions out there that almost seem like they need to answer. What exactly is the Cal doing? Why is it doing it? There are certain things it seems like I was thinking along the lines you were. This episode I thought was great. I was wondering, was it necessary to tell this perspective? And by the end, I landed on yes, it was to see this other side of it. And so I wonder sort of what's necessary as we finish up this last 25% of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think it is because it's clarifying. In terms of thinking about the broad strokes of what's going on, it also seems like Irina is not in this world.
Yeah, exactly.
She's not at the hearing,
Yeah.
right? We can't say definitively she's not in this world, but she's not at the hearing. So
Yeah,
maybe there's
she
also
well, she
the world
led
that.
the hearing in Joe's world. She's nowhere to be seen in the one with Paul.
Correct. So,
So is that the world where it has to be the world where she died as a cosmonaut if we're connecting those dots?
that's what I'm thinking. And
Yeah.
there really does seem to be a big way. There's a strong temptation to reduce everything into two, right? You've got the world where Paul lived, Joe died, Irina's dead, Bud is a failure, the Cal device does not exist, and Alice speaks Swedish. You've got the other world where Paul died, Joe lives, Irina's alive, Henry's a success, and Alice does not speak Swedish, and there is a Cal device, if I didn't hit him. It seems like those are the main two, and I can't quite formulate this yet, but I'm going to try. I have this percolating interpretation that there are actually a whole bunch more. And that the versions are just kind of so close together that for the sake of the story, it doesn't quite matter that there are a manifold or something like this, as opposed to two or three. And maybe that's why the show's called Constellation.
Oh, okay. So Constellation is a series, sometimes a large series of things. You connect the dots and it all makes up one picture, right?
That's what I'm working on.
Yeah, we actually haven't referenced or talked about any constellations in this
Why is the
show yet.
show called
Ooh.
Constellation?
Yeah, this is a good idea you stumbled on here, I think. Yeah, so the one complete story can't be told without this multiple points in which to connect all of them.
Yeah, so we'll see how it plays out,
Yeah.
I know the name of next week's episode. I think we can probably say it. Did you notice the name of next week's episode?
No, but I'm going to go look while you're saying about this. Oh, okay. Yes, I did know this. Yeah. Okay. We've referenced this before. Yeah.
But no, here's the thing. When we talked about Alice in Wonderland and Through the Looking Glass before, I had not noticed that yet.
Yeah, same.
Okay, so there's every chance next week's going to focus on Alice. Particularly,
Which I must say, it needs to. We need to. That's one of the maybe the top question of what we need to focus on before this series out is what exactly is happening to Alice? Why is it happening to Alice? And how can, again, we apparently saw at the end of this episode as well, how can Alice be in the same place twice? Of the fact that we know that this is twins playing them.
But the fact that she sees Joe, we
Yes.
get several things in this episode. This is an Alice who speaks Swedish. They have the memorial service, and we
Yes.
see that from the other way around. She seems to see herself and freak out. And then at the end of the episode, this whole thing where she goes to the cabin with Magnus seems to line up with what we saw previously at the beginning of episode four. Carrying that forward, she's looking out the window and she sees Joe arriving to the cabin, presumably with the other Alice in the back seat, right?
Exactly.
So it's taking us to that moment of these things kind of coming together that we've been hitting on throughout the series.
Which again raises another series of questions of, is the cowl creating some sort of liminal space? Is the cabin a liminal space? Is there something happening between one of the people that has created this sort of liminal space where these can actually exist at the same time, although they are clearly in different realities or universes? I mean, that was quite the scene to leave that episode on. I can only imagine that we're going to get something about Alice, her perspective, and what's actually happening to her, leading back up to that again in episode seven.
Yeah. And one wrinkle I want to be sure to note here is that as much as signs point to the cowl device, the one version of Irene had died in the 60s. The Apollo 18 was back in the late 60s, right? Now we're playing with quantum mechanics, and so okay. You could have an event in the future affect the past. I think that's an open possibility. Maybe they'll go in that direction. But I think they are more in the wheelhouse of the kind of many worlds interpretation. And the question is just whether the cowl device is opening up to the communication between those worlds, maybe, more than anything.
I put this in there. There's this theory floating around. See what you thought about this, that they showed it again in this episode. You know, that the cowl accident happens while Joe is on her iPad FaceTiming with Alice. And she is showing Alice the experiment when things go haywire. And so, in addition to Joe and Paul, who have had all of these things happen, Alice actually observed it. We know that Henry observed it when he got it back to Earth. He couldn't replicate it. He couldn't show anyone, but he observed it, right? So these things are happening to people who literally observed this experiment happening with the cow. Is that possible, even though Alice was, watching it on FaceTime?
I suppose. I mean, it's just something I wonder in the back of my mind is, a lot of things point to the cowl as central to this, but is it the full answer? If it's presented as such, then I guess, yeah, you could say, well, Alice was on the FaceTime with her mother when they were looking at it and so on. I don't know about Irina, I mean, it's.
And the cow didn't exist with Irina and Henry Budd all those decades ago.
Yeah, that was my point, right? And recall also Henry's whiteboard. He's got death in space on there. So how does death in space factor in? In terms of your previous question, I do feel like the show owes us some level of a explanation related to that, or at least enough to allow for coherent interpretation. It doesn't have to spoon feed us, but needs to at least give us enough to work with. To kind of like have a line on it, this is how I interpret it and it holds up.
I agree. I agree with that.
Brief step back where this would have fit in. We're talking about Alice in the cabin. Maybe worth noting because we talked about the paintings on here, they call attention to it. How did this land for you? Because I thought that the way they talked about the paintings was actually kind of weird.
Yeah, it was trying to, again, this is just one of those things I think this is better left open to our interpretation. And trying to explain, not they weren't trying to explain, but they're trying to, through Alice, say what each character thought about the paintings, what certain characters thought about the paintings. What wasn't my favorite way to come back and revisit that idea of what these paintings could be about.
Yeah, I wasn't, particularly since I took the time to like write a whole article. They're like, they called attention to it. They're like, okay, but I mean, it was interesting that they're referring to the painting on the wall as paintings, them. Magnus goes along with that. Alice calls the painting a changeling, which. So maybe she sees different versions of the painting at different times. I tried to do some research on this. To my knowledge, there are no paintings that like change like that. That's not a thing. I mean, if instead of a painting it was a big tablet on the wall, sure. But I don't think in terms of something that's actually a painting.
And it does, I think, force to revisit the question of are these Alice's, like, I don't know what the right verbiage is here, interchanging between places. So I mean, she's going to the same place and she's seeing these paintings change, and that's the only explanation she could have for it. Is it something that just changes while it's up on the wall?
Yeah. I mean, I think we've got to be going in something like this direction. This episode ends. Alice is looking out the window. She sees Joe out there. What does she do next? Puts on her coat, trucks outside of the cabin, doesn't see Joe. Thus, it would connect up to seeing her in the snow, yelling mama, and so on and so forth. You know what? She does that for a while, gives up, goes back to the cabin. Oops, it's not the same cabin anymore. Now it's the frozen cabin, and no one is there. And she hides in the cupboard. And then Joe comes along and finds her from the other universe. And this is how I'm fitting things together in my mind already. And like, I haven't watched the next episode yet. So if that is directly what happens, apologies, but I haven't watched it yet. So,
That's just a quick aside here. That's important to know for anybody listening to this. You and I make a point to not watch ahead. So all of our thoughts, theories, and anticipations are based in just what we know week to week. We do not watch ahead.
Yeah, particularly with a show like this, I don't want to, do it. Another big question is the situation between Bud and Henry meaningfully the same or different from that of Joe, Paul, and Irina? I'm lumping them all together. Why? Because we know that there's a version of Joe who died in space, a version of Paul who died in space, a version of Irina who died in space. Is there a version of Henry who died in space? I'm not sure that we know that.
I'm not sure that we know that. We know there is a version of Henry who was able to rescue his fellow astronauts and save Apollo 18 in some way. There's a version who was not able to do that. But yeah, that's wildly different than those who have died and therefore have switched realities, switched universes. So that, again, that would go back to why is Henry's on his whiteboard death in space when he apparently, as far as we know, did not experience that. And maybe there is a version of him somewhere who did.
Right, like that's one possibility is that no, there is a third version of Henry who died in space, and the implication potentially would be there's a third version of Joe, there's a third version of Paul, there's a third version of Irina. I was about to say that we haven't seen, but maybe we have seen them and we just haven't figured it out yet.
I think that it's hard to say what would be satisfying here, but for them to somehow connect us to how were we seeing each, if there were three or more, how were we seeing each of those universes along the way, or each of those realities along the way? Because yeah, as Henry is contemplating this idea of death in space and what that means for whatever's happening to these people, he, as far again, as far as we know, did not experience that. But if he's going down that philosophy, he must know something or have experienced something or understand that there may be a version of me out there who did die.
Maybe that's why it's on the board because he doesn't know. And he's
Exactly. He
like,
has to know.
maybe one possibility is there's a version of me who died in space. Is
Yeah,
that,
in space? Question mark?
yeah, exactly. Lithium seven circled for some reason. Yeah. Bud is angry. There's also questions about how his timeline fits together. He apparently shoots Paul at the end of the episode. We don't see Paul being having been shot. It felt to me like this was before when he makes Henry piss his pants, but I'm really not sure.
I have to go back and look at what the timeline is there.
It's the only thing is, Bud seems so resistant to. He tells Paul to take his pills and so on and so forth, you
Yeah.
know.
I wonder if I was trying to think what the timeline was, because he goes to see Bud right after the funeral service for Joe, as far as I understand it, or pretty soon thereafter, on the same day or what.
We don't really know how long it's been. It could be a week or two.
Yeah,
You
we don't
know,
really.
I don't know. Yeah, I just I don't.
And I'm curious to see what they do with that, because as far as we know, we have not seen one of our other characters die in the universe that they are not supposed to be in. Does something happen there? Does something revert? Whatever the, you're thinking, what happens? Does that sort of throw things out of sync here? If someone dies where they're not supposed to, I'm curious to see
Yeah,
what they
that's an
do.
interesting possibility. Yeah. I'm just thinking that something like Bud kind of sort of seems to think like NASA maybe sent Paul to him and now he's angry and that would motivate his anger towards Henry more than we'd seen before. But kind of unclear how the
That's also a thread they have to follow, is just how capable is Bud in being able to go F up Henry's world, as he said he was going to in episode five, right? What does he mean by that? What is he going to do? How is he able to do it? That will be a thread I think that they need to follow as well.
Yeah, and I'm sure they will. So the title of the episode is Paul is Dead. I think it's a Beatles reference.
That's a great point. Yeah, I mean, I had not, until you sort of showed us these notes, I had not put that together.
This would be the Paul is Dead myth.
On that? No, just want to do your general thoughts on that, and if that could mean anything more right after we've come off of the show where a Beatles song was playing nonstop, and there was a reference to that and
Right,
True
that's
Romance. I don't know
true.
if there's a deeper thing here, but
Well, I mean, if anyone listening is unaware, right, this would be a reference to what's known as the Paul is Dead myth. You could look it up, you could read about it in more detail. But yeah, this period of time in the 1960s where there was like a conspiracy theory that Paul McCartney had actually died and was replaced by a doppelganger, as it were. And Paul McCartney finally comes out and rumors of my death have been greatly exaggerated. Which I think is actually a Mark Twain quote originally. But anyway, there's a whole conspiracy that Paul McCartney was dead, and but then he comes back, he comes out and says, I'm not dead. And then of course, the world being what it is, some people continue to believe that that was still a fake Paul McCartney, and I just thought it was interesting to put in there with this character, Paul, and what's going on in this show. I don't know if there's anything more to read into it than thematic resonance and it being kind of a cool, just cultural connection, but.
Yeah, that's sort of this. It does resonate in the fact that this is clearly dealing with themes of what is reality, what's your observed reality versus the actual reality. What do you believe in the face of facts that are staring you in the face, whether you choose to believe them or not, right? So it's sort of a, what do you make of the reality that you're in? I mean, I certainly see a theme of that throughout this, that you're fighting against something that you know is right, that you know is the way things have to be, but clearly where you are, that's not the case.
Yeah. So how does this? We're thinking about conspiracy. You just put me in mind. I think one of the taglines for the show is something like reality is a conspiracy, which I don't pay much attention to that. Do you think that there is like a bigger, is there a conspiracy in the background? Are there nefarious forces behind all of this, do you think? Or is it quantum weirdness caused by death in space, sort of thing.
The more I think about it, because I thought, well, there must be, in a universe where We have Henry, we have Irina, we have the lithium pills, we have astronauts who take either A or B pills and they're forced to do this to sort of ground themselves and not experience this high altitude psychosis that they're claiming everyone has. There's got to be something, we're going to find more and more layers to that every time we dig into this. Maybe we will, but also just wonder if it's just a matter of Irina and Henry. Something happened to them in decades past, and so they've been working to figure out what that is ever since, and they have stumbled on something, just sort of this trope of the box that humans never should have opened, right? The things that we never should have explored, the closets we should have never looked in, type of thing. So I don't know how deep something like that goes.
Yeah.
Or this idea of we were never meant to go down that road.
Mean, you did put me in mind just now of the scene. I don't remember what episode it was, maybe episode three, where Henry and Irina are dancing, and then all of a sudden she's dead. He sees her as dead. I don't know why I felt like noting that right now, but she's definitely involved in this. She's not in this episode.
No.
Michaela seems to have a more prominent position in this episode than in the other reality, as it were. Yeah, she mentions high altitude psychosis, which apparently like is a thing, maybe, I guess. Like there are indications of that kind of phenomenon people struggling with. But yeah, I guess I don't know. I'm sort of leaning in the direction of thinking that the ultimate answer is more metaphysical or something, but maybe not.
I think that's probably right in that we've got so many metaphysical and quantum questions to answer over the next couple of episodes that's where they will spend their time doing that. We will clearly be focusing on Alice in episode 7 and then seeing how these strands tie together in 8.
Yeah. And thinking back to the tagline, reality is a conspiracy, I suppose, does not necessarily mean that there are dark forces in a smoke-filled room, but could simply be hitting on the idea that reality is what everyone agrees is reality. So if you're Paul and you find yourself in this world where everyone else agrees about what reality is, it's like Bud says to him, "That's not what happened. It's what I thought happened, but it's not what happened. Because look, all of the evidence and everyone in the world knows that Apollo 18 was a disaster and so on." And at a certain point, I have to say, well, I must be remembering incorrectly. But I do
At
think.
what point do you stop thinking everyone else is wrong and that you're just crazy? What makes you get to that point, I think, is a fascinating theme here.
And if Bud now is breaking the other way after years and years and years, he's breaking the other way and saying, "Yo, you know what? Actually, what I remember is what happened," and so on. It does res it does resemble like a psychotic break. And it should we be on Bud's side? I'm not entirely sure, right?
I don't
He's a
know.
murderer.
He is a
You
multiple time murdererer, but who's to say that these things don't force you into those type of actions if you're going through them? I mean, I think we really just can't say at this point.
Yeah. So looking forward to the two more episodes of Constellation to wrap up this story, or we don't know. We don't know for sure, if they have plans and intentions for further seasons or how much closure we'll get. But I think we've hit on everything in our notes. I'm really, really enjoying talking through this with you, Ryan.
This is a great one to really spend some mental and verbal energy on. And like I said, the recaps have been great on the side. These have been good conversations trying to think through what's happening here. I think that we'll get to the end of 8 and have even more questions, and that's fine. We're happy to leave it that way sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, this might not this type of show might not be for everyone.
That's right.
As you're referencing earlier, like, do you want to put on a TV show while you're folding laundry or, you know,
Yeah.
doing, you probably want something else. You got to pay attention and think on this one. But I love it in that regard. And the fact that I'm doing things like finishing the episode and going back to rewatch scenes from previous episodes,
Yeah.
right up my alley. So,
Yeah, I'm
all
looking forward to
right.
seeing.
All right, so I think that does it. Thanks for listening. As per usual, check out tvobsessive.com. Find my recaps of Constellation on there and all kinds of other stuff about TV. Follow us on social media. It's just for TV Obsessive. This will be available wherever you can find your podcast. Maybe that's how you're listening to it. Actually, you're listening on our YouTube channel. If so, please do like and subscribe and all of that sort of thing. And we'll see you next week.
All right, till next time.